This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, PETA compares animal abuse to slavery, and Minister Louis Farrakhan backs Mexican President Vicente Fox. From our New York bureau, Pedro Noguera, a professor at New York University Steinhardt School of Education. Tara Settmeyer joins us. She's a Republican strategist. She's at our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Maryland. All right, folks, let's take a look. And Tara, welcome. This is your first time with us on the roundtable. Let's take a look at the PETA controversy. And people are used to the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, being in hot water, but perhaps not in this way. They have a campaign, a media campaign called Animal Liberation. It's featured 12 panels juxtaposing pictures of abuse of animals to pictures of people in chains, for instance, lynchings, abuse of African Americans in this country. And it has raised an uproar, George Curry, particularly among African Americans and civil rights groups. So what's your thought, A, of the campaign? And two, is this much to do about nothing?
Oh, I think it's silly, first of all, and ill-advised. I mean, I'm always amazed that people, in many instances, care more about animal rights than they do human rights. And I was listening to a show the other day, people talking about their dogs and cats, and that's wonderful, but I don't see it to rise to the level of people caring as much about human beings. So I think it's an unfair comparison. I think it's silly and ill-advised.
Pedro, before I ask you, we should note, just to give people an example of what these pictures look like. One panel depicts a black civil rights protester being beaten at a lunch counter beside a photograph of a seal being bludgeoned. And another shows a hanging with a white mob surrounding two lynched black people hanging from trees. That's juxtaposed with a picture of a cow hanging from a slaughterhouse. So just to try to give a mind's eye picture of what we're talking about here.
You know, I think that PETA is right to try to draw the public's attention to the cruelty that's meted out against animals, not about pets. This is really about the way livestock is treated, which is quite has an impact even on public health throughout the country, these factories now for pigs and cows. However, to equate that with slavery, I think, is way over the line and shows a tremendous insensitivity. But the need to draw attention to what's happening to animals in this country, both in medical research and in the livestock industry, I think is an important issue.
We should note that the organization has suspended the national tours. They take a look at and evaluate this campaign. All right, Tara, what's your thought?
Well, PETA is an organization that prides itself on sensationalism. I mean, this is the same group that throws paint on celebrities with fur coats, and they had another campaign where they used the Holocaust to get their point across. And unfortunately, what this does, and I come from a family of animal lovers. My grandmother was a professional dog handler. You know, I appreciate the efforts to bring attention to animal cruelty all across the spectrum. However, when you use issues like slavery or the Holocaust to get your point across, it cheapens the horrible nature of those crimes. You know, slavery, unfortunately, black Americans in this country have been subject to slavery used in all different examples to bring political points for other organizations and other social movements, which are just not comparable. And it minimalizes what took place for black Americans during slavery. And it's a disservice to both what PETA is trying to do and for individuals who look at slavery and the history of it and how terrible it was.
All right. Turn our attention now to another gentleman who is not new to controversy. That's Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, who suggested in Atlanta at a church that Mexican President Vicente Fox was correct when he said back in May that Mexican immigrants take jobs that blacks do not want. He suggested, this is Louis Farrakhan, to the congregation, "Why are you so foolishly sensitive when somebody is telling you the truth?" He suggested also that blacks didn't want to pick fruit any longer because, as the history goes, we've already picked enough cotton, in his words. Tara?
Again, Farrakhan is another individual who oftentimes spews hatred, and that clouds any of the positive things that he has to say. He often discusses self-sufficiency and how we should support our own businesses and revitalize our own communities and be self-sufficient. However, it comes from a point of shock. The shock value undermines the ultimate message he's trying to convey. What Vicente Fox said was extremely inflammatory, and I don't think that we need to necessarily support that. Anything that puts down the struggles of blacks in this country, especially from a head of state in a neighboring country, shouldn't be condoned in any sense. I think that there are plenty of discussions within our communities that where we can look at these issues and why is it that there is a lack of livable wage jobs and education and what we can do as solutions and have an agenda to promote positive solutions instead of name-calling.
Let me say, first of all, that Farrakhan's positive contribution are not clouded by anything. If you look at the Beanie Man March and what they're trying to do now in celebration of that. Look, I said on this program, and I'll say again, I agree with Farrakhan that basically that was an overreaction, that Fox was wrong to use the word even. That was the real point being made. And Jesse Jackson going to Mexico and Al Sharpton going to Mexico, when we have a big debate here on federal judges and whether they're going to get through the Senate. There are far more things that are important. He was fundamentally correct when he said Mexican Americans are taking jobs that blacks don't want. That's a fact. And the only key point, the stumbling point there was saying even blacks don't want, which was sparked the whole controversy. Take out the word even, you don't have a controversy.
Well, but Pedro, could not the argument be made here that you could take out the word blacks, too, and even if he said even most Americans don't want, because the reality is whites don't want those jobs either.
No, it's absolutely true. And I think that we're not used to hearing politicians speak in such undiplomatic terms, but very few people can argue with the point. That is that immigrant labor in this country takes on jobs that are unsafe, that are dirty, that are underpaid, that most Americans, regardless of race, do not want. And what those who take offense should take offense to is the fact that people have to work under those conditions and not whether or not someone calls attention to it. I find it hypocritical for those who would criticize the president of Mexico and not criticize the working conditions that both African Americans and many immigrants are subjected to.
Let me, George Curry, take you back to what we talked about there, and that is the anniversary of the Million Man March, which will be commemorated by a rally October 15th on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Many people, while applauding that day, suggest that the movement within itself stalled, that we didn't see much out of it. A friend of mine calls it the Million Man Picnic, that we had a great day, but nothing more came of it. When we commemorate this, George Curry, what should we do in commemoration of it?
Well, you and I both were there 10 years ago, Ed. You were doing the broadcast all day for BET, as I recall, and it was quite an event. The challenge is, and this is where you judge Farrakhan and the rest of the leaders, is what do you do once the march is over? There were promises made that there would be an infrastructure in place. Jesse Jackson made similar promises after he ran in 84 and 88. Al Sharpton said he was going to put infrastructure there. If you talk about Gary in 1972, political convention, they all said they were going to have something after the event. That has not happened. So the true test, in my estimation, is what happens when the march are over to empower our communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's no surprise to me that nothing came out of it, because that's typical of the empty promises of today's civil rights movement. And the concept of a Million Man March was a great one. Unfortunately, it was marred by controversy because of Farrakhan's involvement. This is where the churches and our communities should have stepped forward and not allowed someone who spews hate speech when he calls, you know, white people devils and makes disparaging comments about Jews. Unfortunately, that takes away from any of the positive empowerment messages that Farrakhan may have. And that's just fact. And so I hope that this year's 10-year commemoration of that march will produce more fruitful results.
Let's be honest, you don't cover Farrakhan, because Farrakhan has used the term white devils in decades. I've covered him quite frequently.
He's never apologized for the old Muslim language.
No, but you're saying he's saying he doesn't use that language anymore.
And you don't think he doesn't use inflammatory language now? Of course he does.
That's two different things. You said he calls
them
white devils.
Let me see if I can bring it back to something. And here is the issue with Farrakhan in this page room. We see it. He is such a spark that we see the ire of Tara and George raised in talking about him, yet we miss oft times the message. Should we blame the speaker, the controversial speaker, or should we blame ourselves for not being able to discern the importance of the message through that?
No, I think, again, we have to look at the message and why it was that Louis Farrakhan was able to attract so many people to the Capitol that day for this march. He was speaking to an issue for which there's great concern. That is what's happening with African-American men in this country, where today we have more African-American men in prison than in the colleges and universities. So when Louis Farrakhan speaks to an issue like that, he will generate great support. The fact is that I fault that movement because in 1995, when they were marching on Washington, I was there, you had Congress enacting the Contract on America. Meanwhile, so the Congress is taking away programs from the same communities that we are trying to uplift. So the politics of it, I think, were off. But the intent of getting men to take more responsible role in the communities, I find anyone who could argue with that is really, I don't know what planet they're on.
Surely we admit that, of course, Farrakhan has controversial language. There's no question about that. But people who've heard Farrakhan for 20 and 30 years know how to discount there and look to the other message, which is important when he talks about self-help. Terry, you should love him. I mean, a lot of things he talks about sound like anything that comes from the Republican Party.
George, that's absolutely not true. And, you know, I find it disheartening that we, especially in the black community, make exception to our messengers and allow them, well, it's okay for them to say one thing as long as that's positive and something we want here, but it's not okay. Let's brush under the rug the other things that they say, that it's a double standard, because if a white Republican ever said the same things that Farrakhan said, there would be protests from New York to Los Angeles. So there's a double standard, and I think that we shouldn't do that. Number two, just to make a point, the Contract with America did nothing to take away programs that hurt black Americans. The Contract with America was one of the most comprehensive legislative agendas that changed the welfare system in this country, that allowed people to no longer be penalized for working, no longer penalized fathers for being in the homes. It created opportunities for people to get jobs, get off the welfare rolls. And that's just a misnomer that it was taking away jobs. It's just something else that fit the emotion of the issue and bringing people to Washington under false pretenses as far as using the Contract with America as a rallying point.
All right.
Hang on a second,
George. Let me see if I can do a couple of things here as we wrap this up. We should note the commemoration will not only include African-American men in particular, but it's called Millions More Movement, and it is far more inclusive than the first one in terms of the call. We should also note historically that whether you like him or not, I contend, and Terry, you raised the question of black churches. I don't think that there was any African-American institution or leader at the time that would have been able to call across generations and quite frankly, ideology, as did Farrakhan at that time. I think any other leader would have paled in comparison in terms of pulling the numbers at that particular time. And whether you agree politically with the Contract on America or not, Dick Gregory raised an interesting question as we talked immediately following the Million Man March, and his suggestion that what should have been done there was to register to vote, to mobilize African Americans and show Washington at that point the power of the vote. And that speaks to, George, what you suggested there, the idea of a follow-up. All right, let's move forward and take a look at at legislation that will be enacted in Atlanta, a ban on panhandling near downtown Atlanta, and in particular, obviously, the tourist attractions, was approved this week by City Council. In spite of hundreds protesting, suggesting that this is simply an attack on the poor. Atlanta business people are suggesting that there are parts of Atlanta that are so overrun with aggressive beggars that businesses are suffering. So as we take a look at the balance of fairness to all, Pedro, where do you fall on this?
I don't know why the existing laws are not adequate to cover someone who is aggressively harassing someone on the street and begging for money. When you pass an additional law to ban panhandling, you run the risk of both violating civil liberties, because it's not a crime to ask someone for money, and second of all, you run the risk of engaging in racial profiling, because we know who is most likely to be targeted for harassment by the police. So what concerns me is the additional law. I think the law should be adequate to deal with this problem.
Well, I came from Key West, Florida, where I spent the last 2 years dealing with setting up faith-based homeless programs there. And Key West has passed a similar panhandling, anti-panhandling ban. And it's an interesting debate because on the one hand, you have the ability, what's any different from a Girl Scout asking someone on the street to buy Girl Scout cookies or to solicit donations for a cause? And what makes that any different than someone who's fallen into a bad way that's asking someone for a couple of dollars? It brings up a very interesting argument. However, coming from dealing with the homeless community hands-on, oftentimes aggressive panhandlers, especially in areas in business districts and in tourist areas, it becomes a matter of harassment. And when you continue to oblige these individuals, it enables them to stay to fall into this bad way and continue to do that. Whereas in Atlanta, and the same thing in Key West, there are programs that they're given referrals. Well, if you're caught panhandling, why don't we give you a referral? You can go to this homeless program where they can get job training or where they can get the services they need if they're mentally incapacitated or have a substance abuse problem. And sometimes that's what it takes. That's the impetus that's necessary to get these individuals off the street. So it's a tough argument.
With about a minute.
Basically, where's the compassion? I mean, sure, they're inconvenience to us, but when you weigh that against the needs, some of the legitimate needs that some people have, you know, it says what we've become as a country. Yes, it's an inconvenience to us, but I don't think a law should be passed against it, and it's not that much of a problem. I don't really feel threatened by panhandlers.
All right, Pedro Noguera, Tara Settmeyer, and George Curry, thank you all for joining us. Greatly appreciate it.